there are opportunities in life for gaining knowledge and experience.
So let's have a conversation.
Okay. What would you like to have a conversation about?
It's the 25th episode of The Conversation, a Nordic film podcast, coming to you from, not live, but from France.
Yeah.
Zergy. Yeah. We're actually in the same room today.
Yep.
Going to talk about movies. We haven't really been to the cinema because we've been preparing to travel to France and spent the summer holidays together. But we have, well, been watching a few movies, and we tried to do a theme of French film, the French New Wave.
Yeah.
We thought it was fitting to do that now that we're in France. And then also due to our conversation last episode and a follow-up comment on Facebook, we also watched Wayne's World. So yeah. What a great match, French film and Wayne's World. But before all that, I mean, we got down here a few days ago. We've been spending some time together in a house in France. Northern parts of France, and we've been watching a little bit of this and that. So Trygve, what have you been doing, like, until we got here, maybe, and also a little bit, like, being here?
Yeah, it's mostly been, like, preparation for the travel and the house swapping, because this is a house swap. We have a French family in our home in Iceland now. So yeah, this preparation involved, and, you know, a lot of cleaning and stuff like that. But actually, we're just really enjoying being here in Cergy-Pontoise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Yeah, how is I think that? So. I think
Cergy-Pontoise. And really enjoying first recording in the same room for us.
It's so a very different feeling.
Yeah.
We planned on doing one of our first shows like this,
yeah,
but then time didn't allow it,
yeah,
and now we've done 24 episodes online, yeah, and now we're actually looking each other in the eyes.
Yeah, so that's become a norm, and this is kind of weird now.
This is very weird, yeah. but good.
Yeah, yeah. And Rune has been telling me how to place my microphone and my sound should be okay today.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, but being in the same room, maybe there's some other technical difficulties, but we'll see later.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully it all goes well.
But so. Yeah, really enjoying France, even though we've had pretty much an Icelandic weather for these past few days we've been here. But yeah.
Slightly hotter.
Yes, slightly hotter. I'll give you that. But it's nothing to complain about, really. It's a great house. It's we swapped with a great family, and we're just feeling really well, feeling really good here. Mm-hmm. But film-wise, it's been slim pickings,
yeah,
because, like always, we're so busy. I did watch a Woody Allen movie, though,
okay,
the other day, Blue Jasmine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. How did you like that one?
Well... I tend to compare to the best of his films, mm-hmm, so it was a really solid, good film, but I think it's like a 3 out of 5 for me, mm-hmm, because of his canon.
Yeah.
Although, what's the name of the favorite of the main actress there, yes, again?
It is... I was sitting here thinking about it, but I couldn't find it.
See, preparation is good. I should have written this down. Of course, I know I would 99% of the time can tell you her name right off.
Yeah, it's that woman.
Yes, it's that woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking it up here.
Yeah, but doing she can
Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett, of course. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah,
come on. This is old age for me. The names, they don't come as quickly.
No.
She was brilliant.
Yeah.
And it was her movie. If she would not have been good, it would have been a bad movie.
Yeah.
She was good. It's a good movie. But I have to place it in a canon, so it's 3 stars out of 5.
Yeah.
something like that.
Yeah. I remember I watched it in the cinema, but I mean, again, I really liked her performance, but yeah. I thought the movie was lacking a little bit, but I don't remember why. I was just a little bit annoyed by the end. It was But he's done good movies, but lately, like, his newest ones seem to not land with me in the same way.
Except Midnight in Paris.
Not that one either.
That landed with me big time.
It was a nice movie. It was very pleasant. I loved the atmosphere.
Going back to the, what was it, 20s seeing all those big names, Hemingway and Paris.
Mm-hmm.
That was good.
Maybe we need to go to Paris and check out some of those locations.
Some would say we are in Paris.
Yeah, we're on the outskirts.
We're on the outskirts of Paris, yes. But we're going to head out there tomorrow, I think, just do some checking that out.
I'm sure Woody Allen didn't think of this Paris, though.
Not really.
For that movie.
No, no.
It's a bit more romantic.
Not really a fancy part of Paris. I went to TripAdvisor yesterday and checked out the reviews. So apparently this is not really a fancy part. It's one of those new towns, they call it. That's been built like in the last 40-50 years. So it hasn't got the whole character or architecture that they're used to here, but it's very nice.
Lots of fields.
Yes.
It's kind of like being in the countryside
almost. On one side there's just countryside
and
great pier, harbor, Port Cergy. My French is awful.
Beautiful.
I know no French.
No, so me neither.
This is just me trying.
There was a guy, there was a woman yelling Monsieur, to me the other day, and I had no way to respond.
I
thought it was weird that I was being called a monsieur.
Yeah,
my but I am.
Instinct is to say, see?
Yeah. Should probably say oui.
Yeah.
Or maybe. Better yet, no.
No.
No, no parlez-vous français.
No parlez-vous. Parlez-vous. Parlez-vous anglais? That's the correct term?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I had German in school, so I don't really know French.
Yeah, me too. We actually have had a pretty good experience speaking English. People tend to speak English here, even at the grocery store, and people try. It's not what they say. It's not how they.
No.
The French are sometimes described kind of as, you know, kind of stuck up about their language.
The first time I was in Paris, just going from one station to the other, I went to the subway and asked if it was the correct direction to go to that other station. And this French woman just laughed at me and turned her back towards me. So I had that feeling right away. But it's great to know now that people actually want to try to talk to you. Of course, we should also make an effort in French, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of hard when you don't really use it more than...
True.
Well, when you're here, which is like the second or third time for me.
I did download an app a few months ago.
Google Translate?
No.
No?
Some learn French type of thing.
Yeah.
But I think I looked at it like twice or something after that. So.
Mm-hmm.
I can only blame myself.
Yeah. Well, I have been watching Master of None.
Yes.
Actually, I got here. I have to confess it was a little bit with half an eye because I lost a little bit of interest after the sixth episode.
Season two.
Yeah. They did something really like what's really good about Master of None is that they try to take up these issues that are not really being addressed by mainstream media, much like Scum. Shame.
I agree.
And for that, it deserves a lot of kudos. But for instance, I think it was the seventh episode, they started following people who were not at all related to the main storyline, just for the heck of it, I guess.
Oh, you mean that episode when they
the deaf
changed perspective?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really liked that one.
I was kind of bored with it because it seemed like a at least in the deaf episode, it seemed like an obvious joke they were going for. Mm-hmm. I loved it for the first 5 minutes, but then they continued it for 5 minutes more. Mm-hmm. So it kind of overstated what its welcome. I think if they had tightened it up a bit and made these small dips into something that is a very good idea. I thought it was great coming into that convenience store, and then all of a sudden there was no audio and you got the perspective from the deaf person who didn't hear anything. Mm-hmm. But it just kept on for too long, and it didn't really interest me, like what was going on. So
I loved the beginning of that episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. in the hotel, not a hotel, it's an apartment building with a doorman.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing. But that show was up there with the best of them.
Yeah,
for me. we don't agree on Master of None. I still say it's the best thing Netflix has ever done. And,
yes.
And there's a point I want to make about this, because I read about the producer talking at a convention or something about how difficult it is today to make a series. Mm-hmm. When you have to turn it in all at once, like 10 episodes at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way people are watching TV shows these days, it's different. Like you're watching,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's in Twin Peaks now.
Yes.
One a week. But most people, well, I say most, I don't know, most people, I think, mm-hmm. are like devouring these. I am.
Yeah. Binging them
and watching them like in two nights. I just watched Glow.
Yeah.
In two sittings.
On Jacob's recommendation? Or partly.
Yes.
Yeah. I still need to get around to watching that, but once.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about it now because I want you to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. I have
really
to watch it.
Want you to watch it.
Yes, I will watch it.
See, 80s. We just love the 80s.
Yeah. And the 70s.
Yeah, and 70s. We found out. Yeah, we love the 70s, but mm-hmm. also we found out. So it's kind of a problem how you make a series that you have to, and you know people are going to watch, binge watch,
mm-hmm.
because you have to keep it interesting. When you, in the old days, when you had to release one a week, you know it's just a week between them, and you have some leeway about how mm-hmm. you make it. You know there's a week between.
Mm-hmm.
People watching it, so there are some elements that are going to be similar. Yeah. But when you do it like that, 10 at a time, you have to keep it fresh between mm-hmm. episodes,
mm-hmm.
knowing that they're going to watch it
in quick
one after another.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a point. I didn't hadn't thought about that.
You also can usually do something more interesting, I guess, because you don't need to keep reminding people what happened in the
True.
Previous episode.
True.
So there's less exposition usually.
Yeah.
And then you have Twin Peaks, as you mentioned, the new one, where they're really not holding your hand at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's actually kind of hard to follow when it is one mm-hmm. every week.
Mm-hmm.
But David Lynch just doesn't give a shit about that. And
True.
But you know, you can,
In Master of None, they talked about it. They're not going to do season three at the moment. They're not thinking about season three because they, Aziz Ansari said that they have kind of exhausted the material here mm-hmm. a little bit. So it has to be some change in this person's life to make a new season.
Okay.
So they kind of admitted that it's been a struggle to keep it fresh.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I think they delivered perfectly, but you're a little bit...
One thing that really took me out of it was his parents, even though it's great that he's using his own parents, but it just didn't work.
And it worked so well.
Using my catchphrase, it really took me out of it.
Took me out of it, yeah.
Because, I mean, it was... I don't know, some of those emotional scenes that could have been really good because they focused on these issues that are actually really real and really great to see unfold on the screen just became a joke about how bad they were acting rather than what the subject matter was. And you were not laughing at their lines, you were laughing at the way they delivered them because they were so bad. And I don't know, I can see the humor in it. But and I know someone who liked it, but yeah. But you know, I'm just not that guy.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll like Azadi.
I will be that guy. Yeah. And I am that guy, and I disagree with you, even though I respect your point of view here. Mm.
it's a good show though.
It is. I am still unconvinced. I've been telling people that it's the best thing Netflix has done.
Yeah.
And you have been disagreeing with me, but you have not really pointed out something better.
No. Well, one thing that was more ambitious without mentioning it.
Yeah.
And you have, like now you watch Glow.
Yeah.
Also.
I'm taking Glow into that point of view, and Stranger Things. And, yes, I'm taking all that in.
And now Matt Groening,
for Netflix.
Is going to do an animated series for Netflix, which I'm really excited about.
Fantasies.
Yeah, epic fantasy
epic
thing.
Epic fantasy.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, love Futurama. I'm not that much of a fan of Simpsons, but I mean, I acknowledge it. And I think it's fun watching it, but it's not something I'm binging, but Futurama I can just binge. I've had several episodes in my life where I just watched the whole thing through and through.
I've always loved The Simpsons, and I think I always will.
Mm-hmm.
Futurama, really never gotten into it.
No?
Watching Family Guy now these days.
Yeah.
Whole lot of Family Guy. Loving that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should switch and watch some Family Guy and some Futurama here.
Yeah.
Because I know Alien loves Futurama as well.
Yeah.
It's very nerdy. It's very much focused on mathematics and science.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of those kind of jokes, which go completely over your head, mostly. But they're in there, and they're meant to be seen. And it's just kind of fun.
Yeah. I've watched... a few episodes, through the years, but it was on TV in Iceland, and nothing major. But maybe.
I think it's amazing.
I didn't think Family Guy was going to be up my alley.
No,
but it is.
Okay, yeah. So I was always a little bit annoyed by the fractured nature of those shows, like how they. I mean, the storyline of the episode could actually just be like 5 minutes or something, and then you always go to those weird associations. Basically.
Yeah.
Things that don't really happen or did happen or might have happened or, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
It just doesn't take itself seriously in any way, so that's just how it is.
Yeah. But maybe I should give it a try.
Yeah.
I think we should do something like that. It's good to do something lighthearted, and we could do it with the kids because they would see it as a cartoon. And be really...
Yeah, I have been doing that with Sumali sometimes.
I tried doing that with Futurama actually, but didn't actually stick.
It's more like Bananas in Pajamas that sticks.
Yeah, we've been watching some of that. And I also tried something new, Thomas the Train.
Yes.
That's kind of creepy.
Thomas the Tank Engine?
Is it? Isn't it a train?
Isn't it British? That means it's a tank engine. Thomas the Tank Engine. I'm not sure.
It's a train to me. Locomotive. It's a locomotive.
They call it engine in the UK, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll just say train.
Thomas the Train it is.
Yeah. And those faces on the top of, like, on the front of those trains are just, they weird me out a little bit.
Okay.
But Röskva has a face with trains. She's always saying trains in Icelandic. Mm. Lestir,
yeah.
Or Netto, which is a shop in Denmark, but toe The last part of that is a train.
Okay.
So she's always pointing at trains and saying Netto. She means trains. So okay. I put it on the TV and she was excited about it for a while.
Good.
So we might be watching a bit more of that.
Good. Yeah, we're still working with Barney and Elmo.
Yeah.
Back home, but you've kind of had the kids entertainment here on the TV. Mm-hmm. So it's Bananas in Pyjamas, yeah. And that's
great.
Yes.
Yeah, the new episodes, not the puppet ones, but these are like computer animated.
Yeah.
Australian shows, apparently.
Australian.
Such a weird thing, putting bananas in pyjamas.
It is.
Yeah, it seems like a really high thing to do.
And they don't have names. It's B1 and B2.
Yeah, and then the teddies.
Very simple. No names.
Well, the teddies have names. And
okay.
There's a cow called Camembert.
Camembert cow.
Yes. Yeah. And rat, Mr. Rat.
Yes.
You know, why would you call a rat anything else than a rat? A rat's a rat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, should we get on to the serious stuff?
Let's do that.
Not serious. Nothing serious here.
Should we start with the elephant in the room, the Wayne's World movie?
Sure.
And then move into the more serious stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't know how much I can say about Wayne's World.
Me neither.
Okay. So let's go into it.
Okay.
Excalibur.
Wow. 64 Fender Stratocaster in classic white with triple single coil pickups and a whammy bar.
Pre-CBS Fender corporate buyout.
I'd raise the bridge, file down the nut, and take the buzz out the low E.
God, I love this woman. Hi, Garth.
Hi.
Where's the clerk? I know. I'll use the May I Help You riff.
May I help you?
So that was obviously Wayne's World. It has a 25th anniversary this year, this summer. So we thought it was really fitting to actually try to rewatch it and see if we still like it. And well, I'm going to start off by listing a few quotes that I remember.
Good.
Off the top of my head.
Good.
Cheer.
Cheer.
Yeah. I love you, man. If you're going to spew into this.
Yes, in the tiny cup.
Yeah. 5, 4, 3.
Yeah, no. Oh,
see, you did it already. You don't say two.
You don't say two.
I like to play. Also that one. I'd like the Kamasan Young Guy.
Kamasan Young Guy.
Yeah. And along the same lines, ripped for her pleasure.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, Mickey, you're so fine. That whole song.
Mm.
The Foxy Lady song.
Mm-hmm.
And then Car, Game On, Game On. You know, this movie is filled with quotes that I and Alien were using all of them on, well, maybe not a daily basis, but a monthly basis. At least one or two of those will appear during 1 month of our lives. And I just realized that now. Like, I know Wayne's World has quite a few quotes, but it was just like almost every single scene has something that is memorable and that I just cherish somehow. And cherish so much that I actually use it. I mean, the spew into this, I always say that in a train, in a plane, maybe not an automobile, but yeah, could also be.
Yeah.
Or whenever I have a very, very small bag.
Yeah. That was just top of the iceberg with the quotes though.
You know, yeah.
You know that. I mean, it's a whole lot of them. Excuse me?
Yeah. Bake your powder?
Baking powder?
Yes. Yeah. Do you have any Grey Poupon?
Stuff like that. That's in the vocabulary.
Yeah.
Of English-speaking countries and
yeah,
Iceland, Denmark.
Yeah, in Denmark. I mean, we use these.
So there's a whole lot of influence there.
Mm-hmm.
That this picture's had.
Yeah. It's really hard for me to see it as like with fresh eyes though, because I saw it as a kid.
Yeah.
I realized I was probably 8 years old when it was released, and I probably saw it a few years after that once it was on TV. So 10 years old is maybe, approximate. Yeah. And I loved it back then. But I also loved Guns N' Roses and that whole thing back then. So maybe it just fed into that feeling. But then it was so much fun.
So 90s glam rock, you were into that at that age. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I was into David Bowie.
Yeah.
Also.
Also, okay.
Like that was when I was 11. Then I transitioned into the real stuff.
Okay. 11, yeah. That's early.
Yeah.
For the real stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've been...
Ever since.
Ever since, I've been a huge Bowie fan. Yes. Rest his soul.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I made some notes here, like, because of that, because I think a lot of what was going on, I didn't really appreciate as much. I was more into the goofy stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And now watching it, I mean, I'm totally loving Rob Lowe and his, his comedy is so subdued.
Yeah.
But
so subtle.
Yeah.
But
he's spot on.
That's what we both said when we watched it like two nights ago. He was perfect in that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff in there that actually, groundbreaking, I don't know, but stuff I hadn't seen before, like mm-hmm. talking to the camera and something else I had, but I forget.
Mm.
Like the product placement, where they make fun of the product placement.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
That just kind of sets it apart as well as a... As a movie, not just the humor.
Mm.
And there was a star maker. I mean, Mike Myers, just huge.
But he was a bit in America, I guess, before that, due to the Saturday Night Live sketch of Wayne's World.
Is he like Canadian, like all famous Americans?
Probably. I think he is Canadian.
They have like a hockey thing going on there.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of fun also. The whole car game on thing.
Game on.
Playing hockey in the streets.
Yeah. Also, this movie made like a comeback for one of the Queen songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a comeback it was.
Mm-hmm. Ellen always says that she's thinking of that scene when she listens to that Queen song.
What's it called again?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
See you again with the names.
The longest rock opera ever.
Okay.
I think it was like 8-10 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
Made for radio. Didn't want to cut it down to some radio version.
Good. So
that was amazing. But yeah, it got a comeback.
There. Huge comeback.
Of course, I knew
Queen
it.
Queen got a comeback time, kind of through that. I think it was a vehicle for Queen comeback in the 90s.
Yeah. Also that. It was in 91, so actually Freddie Mercury died the year after.
Yeah, but so I remember I was 18 when it was is released, and mm-hmm. I remember Queen being the old stuff, the good stuff,
mm-hmm.
was so hot back then.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of
that. Yeah, and, I mean, it's...
But let's just...
Collided,
Bohemian Rhapsody got a huge comeback there.
It did. I'm not sure if it's the reason I... No. I knew it beforehand. I remember I watched a lot of Freddie Mercury stuff when I was a kid. Also, I loved that Queen stuff when I was a kid. But yeah, I mean, Wayne's World. Another thing I thought was boring was Al Bundy, or like that. I don't remember what his name is. Al from Married with Children.
Yes, and Modern Family now.
Yeah. And he was very nihilistic.
Yeah. Very much so.
To say the least. And just really, really, morbid in his ways. And I really never got that. I was always so annoyed that the camera followed him instead.
Yeah.
But then again, they spoke to me because they were also annoyed that he hawked the camera. So, like, I was laughing at it, even though I thought the whole skit somehow was boring.
Exactly.
So, like, but what I think is the most, like, the greatest thing about Wayne's World is that you can see that everybody was having fun doing it.
Yeah.
There are certain scenes where it's just so evident that either they're cracking each other up, but they're keeping in line with the scene.
Yeah.
And it's just, it creates this energy that's apparent throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And it might be nostalgia also, but I have nothing bad to say about the movie. I mean, maybe that it just ends kind of doesn't really know how to end, but they even address that by just making three endings and say like, whatever, pick yours somehow.
It's so refreshing where people don't really take them that seriously,
yeah.
Take themselves seriously.
Yeah.
And just, this is entertainment and it's massive, fantastic entertainment.
Yeah. And you also realize that that it's just a little bit, well, it's just sketches. You know, it skits,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
And I realized more than ever now watching it that it's based on a sketch show, because every single scene is a sketch in itself and it's funny.
Yeah.
And that's about it, you know. Yeah, that's great music. And not to forget that it has a female director, Penelope Spheeris?
Spheeris, yes. Yeah.
Who was well known for a punk rock documentary that she made in 81, the second part in 88, and the third part in 98. So she was like, before Wayne's World, she was a documentarist documenting punk rock. So that makes sense.
Putting
her into this kind of movie, because there's a lot of music, Alice Cooper, Tia Carrera, mm-hmm. Singing, and they shoot this very much like a concert footage, and it looks good, mm-hmm. and it works. So that's a good pick.
True. We got to talking about after watching this, we got to talking about like no name characters. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Actors that you see hundreds of times, but you never know their names.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few here, like Brian Doyle Murray.
Yes. Well, I mean,
yeah,
big brother of Bill Murray.
Yeah.
He's also in Groundhog Day.
Of course. And Kurt Fuller as Russell. He was good.
Yeah. I mean, you don't remember him.
His name, no.
No, his name, no.
And we have some great cameos, like Meatloaf is in there.
Yeah.
And
as a bouncer.
And Robert Patrick as the bad cop from Terminator 2.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's quite amazing, because Terminator 2 was released in what, 92?
Yeah.
91, 92? Yeah. So it, and Wayne's World was in 91?
Wayne's World was 92.
92. So it's just like they released at the same time. And then a comedy movie of the same year is referencing the one of the most, like the biggest movies of the year.
At the same time.
That's quite spot on.
It is. But they must have, they did know that the Terminator 2 was going to be huge.
Yeah. It's James Cameron.
Yeah. It's a safe bet. We also have Alice Cooper coming on there.
Yeah.
Doing some... talking about, what was it, philosophy or something?
Yeah.
Milwaukee. Yeah.
Milwaukee.
Yes. Origin of the name of the city.
One of the first.
So settlers. All around good stuff, enjoyable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't aged at all.
Chris
Farley.
Farley.
Yes.
Yes. Also made an appearance.
Yes. Apparently he was fired from Saturday Night Live along with Adam Sandler. Trivia I read somewhere.
Why?
No, I don't know if it's true.
Okay.
The Bad Boys of SNL.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I don't know.
Adam Sandler. That's a topic for another time, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, it was a great movie. I have no critique whatsoever.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
I think it's one of the best comedies from the 90s, at least.
We should watch number 2.
Yes.
Because
that was the plan.
Yeah, it was a plan. But
it's not possible to find it down here in France, and the network connection. I mean, we don't do a live show because of it.
Yeah.
It was just,
Yeah, we were thinking about doing a live show. We planned to do a live show, Danny. This was supposed to be live.
Yeah.
On everywhere, Facebook and
yeah,
whatnot.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. But the internet connection in this house is so limited that we can't really. It's not possible.
No.
So that's been postponed.
Yes.
But we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
Sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing about Wayne's World.
Yeah.
Both the girlfriends kind of fell asleep.
Yes. But that to Alien's not credit, but she has seen it a lot.
Yeah.
And she loves it.
To her credit.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Shep doesn't. Well, she saw it once and said, isn't it just that movie about goofy guys going around and being goofy? And, well, I mean, to a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the movie in a nutshell, but it's really fun, goofy stuff. You know,
yeah.
No stairway denied, you know? I mean, that scene she even agreed was funny.
You did know. We find out if that was Fabio in the store?
No, it didn't seem like it.
No,
I didn't see him in the credits.
I was thinking it was not.
But everybody had that long, full hair back then.
It did look like Fabio.
It looked like Fabio.
Bit, yeah.
If any of you have information about the store clerk from the guitar store, then please write us at theconversationpodcast.net.
We also...
Contact.
Talked about a bit about why Tia Carrera didn't kind of make it as a huge star, because she has everything basically. Mm-hmm. At least I'm not saying she's a great actress, but
she's good.
She was good at this.
Yeah, and she seems very natural, and she has a lovely smile,
mm-hmm.
like everything that should like put her up there. But I mean, she has been in some of those like True Lies, I think it was, and some of these other like Jack Reacher type movies.
I'm saying with disdain. You just have to remind me of Jack Reacher. apparently, I owe him still from making him watch Jack Reacher 2.
I'm sure all.
I'm in debt.
A lot of other people will see it the same way. but I looked her up actually just before, and she is in a movie that's being released this year. Main actress, Palm Swings, it's called.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we were spitballing. Maybe it's this we've heard about that there being like an Asian ceiling in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's tough for Asian people to kind of make it in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's true.
Yeah,
maybe it's because of that. I don't know.
Maybe. I think she's from Hawaii.
Hawaii. So. Yeah, but she has that.
She has the look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was in Lilo and Stitch, which is an amazing Disney movie. Seen it?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah.
Saw it just the once though.
Yeah.
And with, you know, like you do.
Yes, like you do.
I have a tendency to look at these as kids' movies.
Yeah, but I think especially Lilo and Stitch, it had some really mature themes. I mean, Lilo is lying and singing, I'm so lonesome I could die on the floor, you know.
Mm-hmm. I must admit, I don't remember much from Lilo and Stitch. I must have watched it with one eye or something.
Yeah.
But to finish off Tia Carrera, she did keep a straight face while Mike Myers was... improvising his Cantonese.
Yeah. Almost.
Almost, yes.
But they used that smile. Something good. I think I read that she was speaking real stuff.
Yeah.
And Mike was just, well, ad-libbing the whole thing.
Mm.
And doing something really, really funny.
Yeah.
And yeah. I wanted to say something like that right now, but I'll spare you. So do you have anything else about like Wayne's World?
I read something about him doing a new show.
Okay.
And
I haven't seen Mike Myers for ages. I mean, he went
the
into
Gong Show. He's like the it's a TV series.
Okay.
He is some host on the Gong Show.
Mm-hmm.
In a like this huge makeup thing.
Of course.
Recognizable, of course.
That's his thing now.
Yeah. So.
Oh, and Austin Powers 4 is being made.
Really?
Yes.
Well, they say rumored here on the database.
It says announced on IMDb.
Really? It says rumored here.
Weird. You're using a cell phone. Can't trust them.
Yeah. So if you have better notes, you have a computer. I have a cell computer. Phone, yeah.
Yes.
There's my excuse.
It says announced here.
Okay.
And it's rumored that, so Austin Powers 4 is announced, but it's rumored that
he will do it.
That is going to be called Austin Powers, or like he will do it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's some new Austin Powers. Maybe Tom Cruise will finally land that role of Austin Powers.
I will able to live without Austin Powers 4.
Yeah. I did like the three first ones, though.
I liked them mildly.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. It's okay. Maybe three is too much.
Yeah, the third one was a little bit, but it had some good stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit too much. Okay. It was not that much quality.
Yeah, one more thing. It's that scene where Wayne fights Tia Carrera's dad in number 2. Yeah. It's a scene that I love.
Yes. And we didn't even get to see it.
No, deeply. So maybe I'll brush up on that. I actually did watch it on YouTube the other day.
Okay.
Just that scene.
Just to laugh a little bit.
In work. It made my day.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So should we get into a little bit more heavy stuff? Well, heavy stuff, but more serious stuff.
More serious stuff, yes. History, film history.
Yeah, the French New Wave.
Elle avait des bagues à chaque doigt, des tas de bracelets autour des poignets. Et puis elle chantait avec une voix qui cite au manjola. Elle avait des yeux d'opale, qui me fascinaient. Il y avait l'ovale de son visage pâle, de femme fatale qui me fut fatale, de femme fatale qui me fut fatale.
Okay, we're back. With beer, with a new beer.
With beer
number 2. What do you have right now?
We have a Perlenburg Lager.
I have something called Kronenburg 1664.
Yes, I think this is a German beer.
Isn't Kronenburg French, I believe? I am not sure.
Maybe. It has been produced by Lidl, though.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well.
A tiny sip of that, and we're ready for the French.
New Wave.
New Wave.
Which movie are we starting with?
Yeah, I think we'll just start with Jules et Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And but first I wanted to say a little something about what this is.
Please enlighten me.
Well, like all movements, air quotes, it's rebellion against something. Mm-hmm. And apparently it is started by a few directors that have been categorized into two, like, left and right bank. In the right bank, we have film critics from a magazine called Cahiers du Cinéma in Paris. And they just started making their own films.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rebelling basically against how the system was at the time. It was a very studio. The studios
driven
somehow, yeah. And a lot of period pieces and like heavy pieces going on, like huge productions. So they decided they didn't want this. They decided that they wanted more something more fresh and like handheld cameras and all kinds of simpler movie making. So they started making movies. And this is called the right bank. This is like critics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a left bank.
Yeah.
Which are like established movie makers, older, that It's a little bit different school, but not as film crazed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a tiny background. Well,
so in
their influences
ways,
are like film noir, Hitchcock, you know, Truffaut and Hitchcock. They Truffaut was a huge Hitchcock fan and did a whole book on him with their interviews. Which I have ordered yesterday. I want to read. Also existentialism and like auteur theory, which I think is the most important, because it's no longer for these people, it's no longer the studios that's in charge. The director, the auteur, is in charge. It's his piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important. I think that's the most important thing. And it has like begotten other movements, again, air quotes. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't really call this a movement. They called it a feeling, as I think Godard said. Like Dogme, 95. Yeah, very related to that. Very much.
I was very... I was thinking of that when you were talking about it.
Yeah. So this is starting like 1958 and running through maybe next decade, 69, 70, so something like that. Mm-hmm. And the main directors are like Jean-Luc Godard, Truffaut, Eric Rohmer from the Cahiers du Cinéma and from the Left Bank, like Agnès Varda, Jacques Demy, to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided we would watch at least two. We want to watch more. I mean, I want to watch Breathless.
Yeah, and we should watch a few more while we're
and
here
will.
In France.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we could... make for this day.
We had like two nights to,
and these movies are a bit harder to take in, so it makes sense that you're not watching them in rapid succession, you know.
Yeah, but we watched them and together also a first for this show.
Yeah
Well, not a first, we did
almost. We watched
Bad
Jason
Moms.
Bourne Bad Moms.
God, yeah.
There was not a success.
No.
Well, it was a success watching it together.
Yeah.
But but not the movies.
But we like sat in silence and awe, basically, watching these two films. We watched Jules et Jim from 1962 by François Truffaut. I'm sorry about the pronunciation, by the way.
Yeah. It's just Jules et Jim.
Yeah, okay.
Or Jules and Jim.
And the second one we watched is Claire's Knee by Eric Rohmer from 1970.
Yeah.
Very late in the era.
Exactly. Claire's Knee. Should we also pronounce that in French?
Sure. Can you?
I'm just... Nah. Sorry, I don't have the movie right here.
Okay.
No. Here it is. Les genoux de Claire.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. It's a bit.
Les genoux.
Yeah.
Genoux.
I think, don't they pronounce G's?
No, I mean like Gilles.
Gilles. Okay. Gilles, les genoux de Claire.
Okay, good.
Okay.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But let's start with the first one, which is early on in the era, like 1962. Yes. And it's... by François Truffaut and Jules et Jim. And it's about these two gentlemen that are very good friends, let's say, and a woman, and basically a love triangle. And we have a lot of different elements going on there, but this is the gist.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rune, how did you like Jules et Jim?
I've seen it before. Actually,
that's right,
and I actually also recommended that we should watch this one because I felt like it was important.
It is important.
Somehow I was not quite as much in the mood for it this time, but there are so many things that are amazing about this movie. It is a movie from 61.
62.
Close.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to see these handheld cameras, the editing style.
Mm-hmm.
They use a lot of jump cuts. And it's so much to just like show the story rather than be tied up in how to present it in a way. I even read that one movie, I think it was Godard who made a movie, Weekend, that had to be cut down because the studio required it of him or something. And he was just like, okay, I'm just going to make jump cuts. I'll just cut out pieces that didn't really work. And then it became the style, making jump cuts everywhere. And you get the jump cuts here. And it's refreshing to see this kind of movie making, I think.
Very much so.
You can see how the beginning of the movie, the whole introduction, it takes probably like 5 to 10 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. It's very rapid. Very like fast-paced, weird camera angles, actually, weird cuts, and they introduce the story of these two people extremely fast. Maybe even a little bit too fast when you're following along with subtitles, because there's a lot of talk, a lot of images, and by the end of the introduction, I was not quite sure who Jim or Jules was. They did have a mustache. Like
we did stop and discuss it.
Yeah, yeah. And Jim did say at one part at one time, so I'm Jim, I have the mustache.
Something like that, yeah.
So there's clearly, it's not just Danish and Icelandic people who have trouble, it's also French people who actually understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
But I think that was actually my biggest gripe with this movie. Is that I wanted to watch it again. So I knew to a certain extent what they were saying, because I was so focused on trying to get all of their dialogue, like get all of that. And there's so much going on in the image side that I like, usually it doesn't bother me, but somehow it seemed like it was so dense. There was so much content in here that I wanted to know what was going on and then just look at the picture. Do you have the same feeling?
Well, I didn't think it, but when you say it, it is quite dense, as you say. It's a lot of story, and it goes a bit back and forth there in the middle with the... The story could have been simpler easily and without taking anything away. But like you, I am basically looking at the groundbreaking stuff, like how the camera acts in there. And there was a dolly zoom in there.
Yes.
Tribute to his master, Hitchcock.
Hitchcock. There. It was a matter of 2 seconds. Yes. I'm not sure you
noticed it. I'm taking your word.
We're going to go back to it, but they saw a statue on a photo, and being poetic as these two guys are, they wanted to find that statue and look at it right away.
Yeah, exactly. it's a weird story.
Yeah,
there's a statue. Apparently, they saw it with their friend Albert.
Yeah.
And there's a statue on some museum in the Adriatic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to just go immediately.
Yes, because...
to look at it.
This statue was amazing and the lips were just so full. Yes,
full lips.
Extremely
absolutely
full lips.
Full lips.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything like it. We need to see it now in person, not just in a picture. Yeah. And then when we see this statue, you get that dolly zoom where you... move away from the statue, the subject, while zooming in. So it seems like the background kind of comes at you.
Yeah. But for me, the story is not that important. The story, the plot is not important, really.
I think it was... it's very interesting to make the story with people from both sides of the war. It to me, it made me... Like Jules is from Switzerland, right? And Jim is from France.
He's from Austria.
Yeah. Jules. Okay. Austria and France.
They fought on different
sides in the Great War. The World War One.
Yeah. It's set like 50 years earlier. Yeah. It starts in 1912.
And there's a long, actually a long middle part where you see stock footage of the war, mm-hmm. And you are just filled with this feeling of how pointless this is, because you have people on both sides. You actually get into the mind of these soldiers that you don't really get to see in these stock footage, because you're channeling their friendship through these soldiers.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, okay, they're standing here, they're in a trench shooting at people they don't know, and Jules and Jim were just always in constant fear that they would kill each other.
Yeah.
By doing what they were supposed to
in the war. Yeah.
And it, like, I thought that was really powerful, because it's not a major theme somehow, but no. it's just underlying, like, these people are friends, and it doesn't matter where you come from. You know, it shouldn't matter. And then you're exactly. just caught up in this big thing mm-hmm. all of a sudden, and you have to kill each other, maybe.
I agree. It's clever to do that. But the plot, it's taken from a book. It's based on a book.
Yeah.
This, which is real events, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason. For the setting of 1912 to 1920 mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
But the plot is no secret. It's about this woman coming into this man's life, and she is she marries Jules,
yeah.
the Austrian guy. And they meet up after the war, and she starts like flirting with the other guy, and then it's a back and forth kind of thing. So she comes between them,
yeah.
You can say,
and a third guy.
What do you feel? Yeah, and there's a third guy.
Yeah,
and there's a baby, and there's a attempt to have another baby now with Jim. And
yeah,
what do you think about this character of this woman?
It's really hard to put my finger on it. Like it seems like she's a femme fatale. They're even
definitely.
She's even singing a song pointing out her femme fatale nature.
Yeah.
She's a very liberated woman for the time also,
mm-hmm.
Doing her own thing. But she's tied down with these like housely chores, or like what the system requires her to do. Like we both acknowledged when we saw her being a housewife with Jules.
That didn't fit.
It didn't fit, but that was her struggle, because the society was still like dictating that, and she was still feeling it, but that was the turmoil that mm-hmm. you see inside of her. And I actually really enjoy her character, because she is like tormented. I don't know what to say about it, really. And that's, again, it comes back to me wanting to watch this movie again, because I'm not completely sure what to think about her character, but she is a very intriguing character, because she has completely her own set of rules that she's following, and when you see it through the objective of like the viewfinder or something of the point of view
mm-hmm.
of Jules or Jim, then she seems like a crazy person, or someone that you can't control, or from their point of view, like she's not a woman like a woman was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make her a bad person, you know. It makes her herself, and I think it's amazing to try to show this kind of woman in a movie.
Yeah.
But it's really, I mean, I'm having a hard time figuring out what I think about it, really.
Can I say?
Yes,
yeah,
please.
I think she's horrible. She's horrible. Yes, she
playing people against each other.
She's playing people, like, best friends selfish. Against each other. Very selfish. She had run away for half a year when
mm-hmm.
Jim came back after the war to see them.
Yeah.
She had been back for 3 months, I think it was.
Yeah.
She demands constant attention. All eyes on me, please, all the time.
Mm.
And she's just having affairs.
Yeah.
She's having loads of affairs. And poor old Jules is just taking it. He's just sitting there taking it because he's completely in love with this person.
Yeah.
And but she's just, well, we can see also towards the end why she is, she finally gets back to Jim and you see how the movie ends. I mean, there are,
yeah.
I mean, that's just, there are, this is not a spoiler territory. This is so
no, old. It's an old movie.
She meets Jim towards the end again after he had rejected her and then kind of walked out of their lives.
Yeah.
So she invites him to take a car ride with her and she drives off a pier and they die.
Yeah.
She's horrible.
But then again, Jim still went with her. And that's the thing. I mean, she might seduce people, but they're doing it willingly. Like Jim definitely, is not a victim.
Yeah.
And Jules is not a victim either. Like in many cases, you could see her, Charlotte, is that her name?
I don't know. See,
don't remember.
Don't know.
I think it was something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, she could also be seen as a victim. Because, I mean, when you get into their home in Switzerland, Jules is just sitting.
Catherine.
Jules is just sitting there writing poetry in his little chamber all day. I mean, and they're in the middle of the woods. I mean, of course she's going to have affairs or something if that is the main thing, you know, like of course she's going to seek something else at least, and she's been put in this situation that she has decided herself somehow, but then it has been required of her to be that motherly figure, which probably doesn't fit her.
She's such a split character as well.
Yes, she is very split because she loves her daughter.
Seems to be a good mother to her.
You know, but she has her own urges, which is never fulfilled in this life that she's leading. But it doesn't seem like, well, Jules knows about the affair.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually accepts her for who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Where Jim might be more wanting that relationship with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she needs both, like, Jim is like a more masculine character and Jules is more like kind of reserved, not masculine at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of requires both elements in her life.
Yeah.
And also she can be nice, like we say, but she also is just awful. Like in recent years, I mean, well, years after the release, there have been so many different views on her. She's, by the way, is played by actress called Jeanne Moreau, a famous French actress.
Mm-hmm.
I read an article from I think her name is Geraldine Greer, famous feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking about how she was like a hero to the young girls of the age.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Because of the fashion and her, she was kind of liberated before the war.
I mean, the first time you see her is with a painted-on mustache to go as a man.
Yeah, and she's playful and she does what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Among them, painting a mustache and going out running. That's a great scene, by the way. The editing and the camera work. It's a great scene. But I think she also accepts that she is just weird, awful person in the end.
Yeah.
And the ending proves she's...
But you know, it might be a product of her life to that point. You know, she's been trying to do different things, but then ultimately she has realized that she cannot be who she really wants to be and therefore committing suicide.
Yeah.
And killing a man at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a horrid suicide.
Yeah.
In that way.
True.
But, you know, but, yeah, she might be a bad person, but like towards the end. But I mean,
yeah.
They fell for her and they're going for her, you know.
It's all so highly emotional. Love is the main force.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Here. And yeah, it's the French for you, isn't it?
Maybe. I mean, even more so with Claire's knee.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yeah. But there's one thing I read and it really hit home for me. That's maybe unwittingly Truffaut was telling a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you read it from a queer,
yes,
LGBTQ, yeah, mm-hmm, perspective. Remember the scenes in the gym with the kickboxing and they always met in the gym. The friends.
Yeah.
They just wanted to be with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a reading. If you can look at it through these glasses.
So she's just the catalyst.
This is a queer film.
Yes.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. They two of them were made basically, well, at the time, 1912, 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not accepted. Gay, not accepted. But they basically are acting like a couple.
Yeah.
These two men.
And it's not a movie like Bonnie and Clyde and like something like that. It's like Jim and Jules.
Yeah.
Also. So mm-hmm. I understand that reading.
Jules is a very, well, you could say feminine, you know, mm-hmm, character. And that scene with her being Thomas, the
mm-hmm,
running around with a mustache. That's very. So the gender roles are kind of muddled.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole lot going on there if you are willing to look at it that way.
Yeah.
We don't know if Truffaut was actually doing that.
No.
But most definitely there's an element there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that actually really made sense for me. Otherwise, I enjoyed the film.
Yes.
Especially the camera work and the editing and the whole how he used stock footage or mm-hmm, newsreels
and different framings like sizes of frames, like sometimes there was just black and like frames going in and out, you know, and it's
freeze frames. Yeah,
that was amazing when she was talking about, was it her beauty or like her appearance or something like that, and it always froze her face in between her lines, you know. It was great. One thing I noticed a lot was that they often have this camera in the middle of the room and then it turns around with the action and comes back to the beginning point.
So
there's for instance, like in the beginning there's this woman that that Jules is hooking up with,
mm-hmm,
who's doing a steam train with the cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then the next day they're at a cafe or like a pub, and they're sitting in a corner, the camera is on them, and then there's this long take where the camera follows her going up to the bar, picking up another man, going out the door with him, doing the steam train thing, so you kind of get the sense, okay, this is, well, another one of her conquests. And then it comes back to Jules, who is
in one take. I didn't notice this.
And she goes out the door and you see her through the window and then it goes back onto him. And I thought that scene was really cool because you started at one point where all the characters are feeling one thing.
Yeah.
Then the whole camera revolves like 360 degrees.
Mm.
And the scene has changed completely. And Jim is like consoling Jules and stuff. So it goes from happiness to sorrow and then like consolation.
Yeah.
That's
one take.
One take. And they do that quite a few times, I think. Also up in Switzerland when they're there, you know, Austria. keep on saying Switzerland.
Yeah,
it's Austria.
It's Austria.
But these 360 cameras, you know.
Awesome.
It was cool.
I didn't notice this.
No, but it's very well made. Also, yeah. it seemed very, like, it worked. But I'm always focusing on those kind of things.
So. Yeah, the character of Catherine is also very, it's very interesting. It's very,
yeah.
How, remember that scene when she's walking with them early on and she just jumps in the river, mm-hmm. Seine, I think it is, for no reason.
Well, she was offended. And they were talking about anti-feministic views.
Were they?
Yeah. And she was proving a point by saying she is a free woman and I'm going to jump in the ocean when you least expect it. And then you can also see it's foreshadowing for what's going to come. Like, she has always had it in her, that self-destructive nature.
Yes. And...
And they knew it from the beginning.
Please.
Yeah.
At all times.
Maybe. Maybe. You could say that. All right. So, should we go on to Le Genoux de Claire?
Yeah. It's the totally different kind of...
It's also 10 years later. It was from 70s or like 1970.
1970. So, it's eight years by Eric Romer.
Yeah.
Claire's knee.
Dans toute femme, il y a un point plus vulnérable. Pour les unes, c'est la naissance du cou, la taille, les mains. Pour Claire, dans cette position, dans cet éclairage, c'était le genou.
Elle est très belle, mais elle fait un peu dur. Je vous voyais avec une femme moins froide.
Tu trouves que nous ne formons pas un couple très assorti?
So yeah, Claire's knee is by Eric Romer. And I also encouraged us to watch this movie out of the selection of French New Wave because I really want to watch more Eric Romer. I have several times watched these, like some of his movies. I think the one I watched was called Les Connaisseurs.
Okay.
Or Les Connaisseuses.
Connaisseuses.
The Collector. And I was just taking with it. I also watched Pauline at the Beach. They all have the kind of same style. It's very... It's as if you're just with some characters on a holiday. Nothing really happens, but you're so taken with... Like, I'm always hanging on every word these people are saying just to be in the situation. And Claire's knee is actually no different, I realized. So Claire's knee is about Jérôme, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
his name.
Yeah.
It is the fifth movie of Moral Tales by Eric Romer. Six Moral Tales. Apparently, Eric Romer wanted to view this topic from different kinds of angles, and he thought this was the best way to do it, just to dedicate one movie to each.
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell, the story that he based it on was a man is involved with a woman but falls in love with another woman but ends up going back to the first woman.
So very French of him.
Yeah. Yes. So that's the main story he wants to tell, but he wants to tell it in six different ways.
Yeah.
And in Claire's knee, he's talking through Jérôme, who is on a vacation to his old area by Lake Annecy.
Annecy. Interestingly, Icelandic football team had their base there last summer when they played at the European Championship.
Maybe they watched Never Claire's mind. Knee and wanted to go.
Yes, because probably.
I really want to go now. It was just amazing, but also because of the setting in the 70s. I mean, the style of their clothing and everything. I mean, I have to show Elin and then make allow me
appreciate
to
appreciate the 70s clothing.
Yeah.
The velour and turtlenecks and stuff. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah,
but he's coming down there. He's meeting an old friend, and then he's
Aurora.
Aurora, yes, who is a writer. He's also a writer. A diplomat?
He was a diplomat, yeah. Not a writer. And he doesn't write letters. He's a diplomat.
He's a diplomat, yes. But he was a writer, though, or is a writer, but he is a diplomat now, has a writer friend, Aurora. They were...
I'm not sure.
At least he's a diplomat.
He's a diplomat. We know that.
Yeah, we know that.
If he's a writer, he writes letters, but he doesn't write letters.
No, he doesn't want to write letters.
No.
No.
Especially with a writer, like he said to Aurora.
Yeah, all right. True. Maybe I got that wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It happens.
He meets Aurora, and then he decides, I guess, to spend basically the whole summer around her house. They make a little deal. They make an experiment that he has to try to seduce her landlord's 16-year-old daughter. Because... She is obviously in love with him, or like infatuated with him. You know, they can see that.
Again, so very French of him, wouldn't you say?
Well, I don't know what I mean. The stereotype of Frenchmen, yeah, French.
Yeah, stereotype. Yeah,
yes. Probably like the whole romantic stuff. I guess I don't know if it's romance when.
I'm reminded of the first scene in that film where he stops and sees Aurora on a bridge, just coincidentally. Mm-hmm. And he stops and he comes to her and they're apparently old friends.
Yes.
If not lovers, I don't know. Old friends at least.
Maybe, yes.
But we were just looking at each other, me and Rune. But why is he so handsy? He was like hugging her, talking to her, and it's weird. Yeah. Weird.
Very, very...
This guy is intimate. Very handsy.
Yes. He's a very intimate guy. And he loves his friends. It is purely platonic.
Purely platonic, obviously.
As he says all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it might be. It's on the edge.
He's a very interesting character, this guy.
Yes. And it reveals, like, his character reveals itself slowly throughout the movie. And, he tries to seduce Laura.
The 16-year-old. The daughter. Yes.
It turns out that she has a stepsister, Claire, who has extremely beautiful knees.
She has beautiful everythings, I think.
Yes, she has beautiful everythings, but Jerome is especially taken with the knees.
Taken with the knees.
And he gets an urge to change this experiment because it doesn't seem Laura wants to pay him any more attention since he tried to kiss her.
Yes.
So he wants to change it into trying to seduce Claire, or at the very least, fondle her knees.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. This is the plot.
This is the plot. This is the plot.
He gets around.
Yes.
On a boat.
On a boat.
Because this is by Lake Annecy.
Yes. And it's amazing to see how he's in his summer... suit.
Leisure suits.
Yes.
1970s leisure suits.
Yes. Sailing around between the different villas towards the edge of this lake. And it's beautiful.
It is. It's so much fun.
And you just want to be there.
You
want to be there.
Yes.
And they even point out themselves that this is a paradise, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
like he's talking to Laura, the youngest, or like one of the daughters, and she's saying that she's so depressed in this area sometimes, but it's because everything is so beautiful around her.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she is like in paradise, and that you can be.
It just gets boring.
Yeah, you can be fed up with such beauty around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a nice line.
It was a nice line. Yes.
She was a very, very well-spoken 16-year-old.
Very much so.
Yes. Most people in this movie are very well-spoken. I heard also that Eric Rohmer, he wanted to make these sin, like moral tales. He wanted to make them very apparent. Like he wanted to deal with subject matter that could not easily be explained in a movie. So therefore you have this... first person narrator in the movie. So like the whole thing is from Jerome's perspective in a way. Like it's not really a narrator, but you can see the camera work is very much his perspective. Mm-hmm. You have the close-up of the knees, for like, instance.
Yeah, the famous frame where he's looking at the knees. Yes, and
it's so suffocating somehow. I felt so uncomfortable with it because it seemed like he was very much viewing these knees in a highly sexual manner of a 16-year-old.
Oh, girl. Yeah. Well, she's not 16, actually.
Is she not?
No, she's a bit older.
Slightly older?
Like 18, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Then it's no problem.
Still.
No. But it's amazing because it was just this very nice scene with, like, they're picking apples and stuff like that, you know? But then all of a sudden you can just see that he's attracted to her, and then it focuses on her knees, and it just becomes extremely sexual. Don't you think?
And sad.
And sad, yeah, at the same time.
Because it's all complimenting what I think Romero is trying to say.
Yeah.
Is that this guy is just, having some kind of a midlife breakdown crisis type of thing. And he's constantly saying one thing and doing the other thing. Mm-hmm. And he's constantly saying, I'm not interested in these young girls. No. It's an experiment and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the while, you get the feeling, yeah, okay, he would do that. He would go there.
Yeah.
He would always go there.
You know, that's I think it's really interesting with this movie because, as I said before, like this narrator type, you want people to describe their feelings, and you get him describing his feelings from his point of view, but his point of view is not to be trusted.
Absolutely not.
And what you see is not necessarily what he says he's doing. And towards the end, you're feeling really bad for these people mm-hmm. that he's engaging with somehow, because he is, as you say, not at all who he seems. He is in a midlife crisis in a way, and is just trying to prove his own worth, like to himself.
Maybe it seems like he's getting married.
Yes.
Yeah. He's getting married, like to a woman who is working for like UNICEF in Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's a diplomat who lives in Sweden. Yeah. He's on his summer Stockholm. Holidays in yes. France. And it seems like he's settling
mm-hmm.
to with this woman who he's had a relationship with for a while.
Yeah.
And it all points to a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know his age. It seems like a maybe 38, 42 type.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Like, early 40s.
Early 40s, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's all very sad when you think about it. Mm-hmm. You come to realize, I came to realize that it's all very, very sad.
Yes.
Very sad for him.
It is.
That he is in this position. He needs to... talk to this friend of his, Aurora, and you know he's lying. I'm not interested in this girl.
Yeah.
I will do this as an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
I touched her, but I didn't feel anything.
No.
Blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
All crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's so lying.
Yeah.
But he's...
Apparently there's a theme with Romare that people say one thing and do another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah. That when I read that really hit home. That's just absolutely what he is doing.
But again, it might be what he thinks he's doing somehow, because he's trying to verbalize this. He's trying to explain why it is he's doing these things. And it might be somewhere in his head, but he doesn't want to realize what's actually going on. Like, and that's what makes it really sad, you know? Like, he tries to talk about it as if it's the most open thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by doing it, like making it into an experiment. But actually, he is conflicted, but he's not in touch with his emotions, even though he's talking about them constantly.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that duality is amazing. It makes the movie so tense,
Yeah. How you get that.
Yeah.
By, yeah. Very, very. This is duality, like this midlife versus the youth. And another thing about this movie is that the colors, the scenery, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. He didn't want to make this as a black and white film.
No.
He insisted this had to be a color film.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really see why.
Yeah.
It needs to be a color film.
It wouldn't have worked in the same way. Not at all.
Even when you think about Jules Jim.
Yeah.
That's those scenes in the Austrian countryside. Mm-hmm. Those would have been really different if it had been color.
Yeah. Wouldn't have been as depressing.
It would quite depressing. Yeah.
They also had some fog in that one, like mist and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was a little bit reminded of Sunrise by Murnau, like 1932, I think. A Song of Two Lovers.
Yeah.
Great, great film.
Yeah, you talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
I should probably get around to watch it.
Yeah. That's a great film.
Yeah.
It's a silent film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's like both films. You feel the times. There's even though it's set earlier, much earlier, Jules Le Jim, you feel it's made in the 60s. There's like stuff is happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's free love and all that. You know, that's you feel it.
Yeah.
And same with this one. You know, people are having affairs all the time and. Talk about it.
Talk about sexuality.
Yeah. Especially that the conversation the 60-year-old friend of Laura's had with this middle-aged man.
Yes.
And he said something about he preferred to be a gentle lover.
Yes.
And caress her nose, was it?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
No, he wasn't attracted to her.
No.
But only... in certain ways, sometimes when he gazed upon her.
Yes.
And he wanted to make love gently.
Perfect example of someone saying something that's not true, feeling something different.
Exactly. And it got a little bit into it because he triggered him to say a few things like, okay, the gentle thing and stroking her nose and like it got a little bit in there. But
and you remarked that people would never talk like this in Denmark.
No, never, ever.
Or anywhere else.
This would be such a boring movie.
This is like you meet someone and you're 17 or 16 or whatever, and you start talking about how you would like to make love to a girl.
Yes.
And the 40-something-year-old man is like, yes, but what about this? Blah, blah, blah. Talking, it's a back and forth thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
And the weirdest thing is that the girl could actually even come by and they could potentially continue the conversation. It would seem the most natural thing ever in this movie.
Yes.
To just continue the conversation about like this lovemaking.
Yeah, there is this atmosphere that it's just normal.
Yeah. It's just like, and it's so liberating in a way.
It is. And it's fun to get kind of get stuck in that world and for a while and...
It is.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
It was so much fun watching these films.
Yeah.
I haven't decided on like stars or whatever, but that doesn't matter at all.
I went a little bit back. Yeah, exactly. I didn't rate Jim and Jules.
Yeah.
But I think Claire's Knee, like 4 or 4.5, something. I mean, I think it's just perfect. It's a very good movie. I don't know why it shouldn't get full stars, but it's irrelevant, really. Because it's just a very good movie.
Yeah, we were definitely just into it on the couch
so
there.
I want to talk a little bit about the camera stuff.
Okay.
Though, because it was so much fun to see how the movie was breathing in a way. There was this rhythm to it.
Okay.
Every scene... When you started a scene, you always started like kind of far out. Then you moved kind of slowly into the meat of it. You know, mm-hmm. as soon as they started to talk about those really intimate emotions, you got into their faces. But you never got like close-ups, really. It was always at a distance, like an over-the-shoulder shot was kind of the closest you could get.
Yeah.
But you still, like, usually it's like these medium shots, like you see the whole back of a person and almost a full body of the other person. So it seems very much like you're a participator in the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes you're getting drawn into their very intimate sphere, even though it's just over the shoulder, but you're like kind of like leaning in and really looking at them and following their conversation there. And that makes it even more tense, I think, for me, because you're always anticipating that, like, when does it go into the close up, and you feel like you're intruding in a way. So I thought that was beautiful, and it lets it, the whole situation, breathe. Like it reminds me of movies like Before Sunset and Before Sunrise, that trilogy of Linklater.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's inspired by Romare somehow, because it's that natural feeling, and people are just talking as if you could talk about anything, you know?
You like it when the camera is not intrusive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you said so before.
Yes. And it's or imposing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just moves in slowly. You don't even notice it sometimes.
Hmm.
And then once he makes these bold choices of making a close-up of the knees.
Yes, when he kind of removes the camera towards the knees.
Yeah.
You get that shot as
such
well.
Such a subjective view. Like you see it's a point of view from Jerome.
Yeah.
And it becomes that much more powerful.
Yeah, like two or three of those in the entire film. Yeah. But otherwise, it's just like you
describe. And one close-up of a picture of his fiancée.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was also very apparent. It was like a very jarring cut because you've been in these conversations and everything, and then all of a sudden there's just a hand holding up a photo of his fiance for 5 seconds, something like that.
And then he and Aurora discuss how she looks, and
kind of stern looking fiance.
She wouldn't, and she's have also
athletic and she's not the type
that
she would normally fall for.
Which kind of helps the plot.
Yeah.
And what they're about to do.
Yeah. So, no, but yeah, it's kind of maybe even the catalyst, you could say, like this picture. But yeah, I just love it. Like I wanted to watch more Eric Romer. Mm-hmm. Now I've seen the third film, and I'm still just like it's the same feeling, and I thoroughly enjoy it.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just please watch it. And next time we're going to France, we're going to Lake Annecy.
Annecy.
And sailing around with life jackets for the kids.
Yeah, they'll be like 5, 6.
You think? Next year?
No. Unlikely, I would say.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm not getting them anywhere near like a lake with a house by a lake until they like.
No, maybe not.
Not 2 or 3.
You should be able to swim. You know, I'm a swimmer.
Yeah, but not at 2 or 3.
I can teach them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
But it would be so amazing. I mean, I really want to go there.
Let's go there.
No.
Yes. And let's watch some more Eric Romer.
Yeah.
And we're going to watch Breathless at the very least.
And Weekend, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. There's a few. So
I guess that's it for today.
Yes, that is it. And now the big news, not really big news, but we're going to have a break, and we're going to have a break for 2 episodes, which means our next episode will be the 6th of September. We will stay in contact on Facebook, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a few like on the way, like updates from us, but our next episode will be the 6th of September.
It's planned on the 6th. Who knows what happens in this
Who
life?
Knows, but that's the plan.
We kind of owe you guys a live show, and
maybe that'll give us some time to actually plan that out and do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a good run. It's been almost a year and it's 25 episodes.
Yeah.
We're kind of proud of that.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Very good. We keep on going.
We love doing this.
Yeah. And
we get to watch films like Claire's Knee.
Yes.
Otherwise, we would not have watched.
And we get to discuss it for a while.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure if I watched it with Alien, we would just be like, oh, that was lustful. Or something.
Yes. Come here to me.
Yes. yeah. So next time in a few weeks, we're probably have watched a few movies, but right now we're planning on maybe doing a Planet of the Apes kind of thing.
Yes, apparently I'm indebted to Rune because of the Jack Reacher thing.
Yes,
but no, I'm just kidding. I'll happily watch the
War of the Planet of the
something
Apes,
like something that. Yes, like that. I'll even see if I can get the other two, and we can have a civilized discussion.
Yeah, about the complete trilogy. I do think it's a complete trilogy, and then they will probably spin it off again. But you know,
you are kind of sneaky though. With
choosing
a third
movie.
I was like fighting for the French New Wave.
Yeah.
And then you actually chose the two we did.
That's true.
I was just so happy with getting to do this.
Yeah.
And
that you lost track.
Snuck it by me. Yes. He chose the films.
Yeah. That's my way.
Yeah.
Working
that's
below.
His way. And now we're doing Planet of the Apes, which is. Which is going to be cool.
Yeah.
But
there's
we're
some
also
other
thinking
things.
About a lot of other
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, like Dunkirk is a movie I really want to watch. Baby Driver has gotten so much buzz. I don't know why. I haven't read anything about it. I haven't seen the trailer either.
Not sure about that one.
No, I'm not sure about it either. But
I get Drive / Snatch kind of vibe.
Okay.
I like Drive.
Yeah.
Drive meets Snatch is kind of that kind of vibe
I'm getting.
Mm.
So,
but we'll see.
So Ryan Gosling is a comedian in Baby Driver.
No.
He's not even in it.
Nowhere to be seen.
Yes. Yeah. So that one. Yeah. Dunkirk. Maybe there's even more. Towards that time, you know, Twin Peaks is about
Twin
to conclude.
Twin Peaks is about to conclude.
So we
that's
might
September.
Have a show dedicated to Twin Peaks.
The Disaster Artist is coming.
Yeah, but that's December. But that's
December.
Something to look forward to.
There's a lot of stuff on the horizon.
Yeah,
and I think it's a good time to take a break. Where you have the summer blockbusters, which we're not really that interested in. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Planet of the Apes is kind of a blockbuster.
That
also
is true.
Dunkirk. But it's more like, maybe not Planet of the Apes. It's just kind of a good reboot, in my opinion. Or reimagining.
Yeah.
Dunkirk. I'm always up for watching Christopher Nolan, even though I think it's sometimes a bit, epic for the sake of epicness.
Mm.
But there is something in it. Like he's making intelligent movies for the masses. Rather than intelligent movies for a few.
Okay.
And that's commendable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's also The Square.
Yeah, The Square. Looking forward to that.
Söderlund, is it?
Yeah, Ruben Östlund or something like that. Yeah, the guy who made Force Majeure.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
This
might be released in September in Denmark. Has already been released in Sweden, I guess. Probably also in Iceland soon.
So there's plenty of stuff out there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do
there's also,
it all.
Yeah. There's a few movies on my watch list that has not been released yet that I'm looking forward to. So all that you will know more about in September.
When the time comes.
Yes. But until then, you can contact us always, we would love to hear your feedback, and you can write us on Facebook, on our Facebook page. Just do a search for The Conversation, the Nordic Film Podcast. We're right there, ready to respond to your comments. You can write us an email at contact@theconversationpodcast.net. Find us on SoundCloud, same name, or our website, theconversationpodcast.net.
And the fifth element, the fifth platform is Letterboxd. Yeah, the fifth element. The yes. fifth platform is Letterboxd, where we always make a list of the films we discuss. So you can check them out.
Yeah, exactly.
All so these places have contact. You can contact us everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm always clumsy with the outro. Why is that?
I don't know. You need to practice on
practice.
It.
Practice the outro.
Whatever. Just say Letterboxd.
Letterboxd. It's up there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you for listening. This was kind of a long show. Guess we're running kind of long. 1.5.
Let's just hold you over until we're back.
Yes. Just re-listen to this show. It's filled with interesting stuff. Keep an eye on us on Facebook. We'll keep you posted on what's going on over there.
And watch Claire's Knee.
And Julie Jim. And, of course, Wayne's World all the time.
Of course, Wayne's World, yeah. And so, once a week.
Yes. All right. So, thanks for now. I'm Rune.
And I'm Trygve.
See you in a few weeks.